support groups for depression, bipolar disorder, OCD, and post-traumatic stress. Separate support groups are also open for relatives and friends. For schedule and location information, or to register for a group, call 631-226-3900.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's 6:01, and that means it's time for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. Well, it's another Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Off the Wall here on WUSB. Emmanuel Goldstein with you on this wonderful fall evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, how you doing?
Happy half moon.
Sure, that.
Today is an official half moon day.
Right.
It only happens twice a year, actually, where the moon is precisely half. That is, half light, half dark. So it appears as, well, actually, I guess as a quarter moon, but you can't ever see 100% of the moon. You can at best see 50%. But today, at this moment, 25%. Sometimes it happens, you know, in the middle of the night. Sometimes it happens before you wake up. But right now, at this moment, it's kind of rare, twice a year, where you get an actual bona fide half moon.
Yeah, I wasn't paying attention. I'm so glad you informed me about that.
And it's a good thing you weren't paying attention, because that was complete balderdash what I just said. I just made that up off the top of my head. I just noticed on the way in that the moon was half. So I just made everything else up. But if you believe that even for a moment, folks, consider how susceptible you might be to all kinds of other false news reporting that you might hear or read about on the internet. Happens to everybody.
Thanks for wasting my life.
There's no shame in it. There's no shame at all in having somebody lie to you and believing it.
I personally hate it.
Oh, look out behind you. You didn't turn. You're learning.
I had peers in school that would do this and really fancy themselves to be hilarious, and I hated them for it.
They talked about the half moon?
No, made stuff up.
Oh.
You know, playing gullible games with people. Because I generally, you know, I like to be more of a nonfiction person in my life. Others don't really work that way, and I don't appreciate it.
Well, a lot of nonfiction is based upon fiction. Did you know that?
I don't care.
That's also not true, though. But okay. But here's something, folks, that is true, and it is important. And, you know, we're not kidding. The Suffolk County hearing for marijuana legalization is happening right now. It just started. It started the same moment our show started. Yeah, nice timing, guys. You didn't plan that, huh? Well, we went to the one in Nassau County, so we outsmarted everybody. But the one in Suffolk County is taking place right now at this moment. It's at the Clarion Conference Center in Ronkonkoma. It's right there on 3845 Veterans Memorial Highway. And when you finally burst through the entrance, make sure you track down the Crystal Ballroom. That's where everybody's gathered. And, you know, if you suddenly are realizing that, oh, my God, I'm late, I have to get that, you don't have to race. It lasts for at least 2 hours, and you can come in late. You can speak for up to 2 minutes, which is a lot harder than it sounds, because time runs out really, really quickly. But if you are interested in the impending marijuana legalization that I think will be happening in New York State pretty soon, if you have concerns, questions, or things that you want them to consider, or even just endorsements of the whole idea in the first place, your voice is definitely something that would be valuable. Again, it's in Ronkonkoma from 6 to 8 p.m. tonight. Clarion Conference Center, 3845 Veterans Memorial Highway. That's Route 454, in the Crystal Ballroom.
I think it's great. I know there's a lot of people participating in the medical access programs here on Long Island, particularly, I think, of vets and others who self-medicate and may or may not be treating things like PTSD. Maybe you're not a vet and you have PTSD, but... I think it's a fantastic progress. So, you know, adults who choose that method of therapy and would like to stay away from, you know, alcohol or other sort of vice around that, but prefer maybe using CBD or other cannabis components, you know, this will provide opportunities for them to actually be treated like an adult, if it proceeds. And I think you mentioned Canada's legalizing
tomorrow. It becomes legal in the nation of Canada, only the second nation in the world. You
nationwide.
Know what the first nation in the world was, Kyle?
The U.S.
No, it's not legal in the U.S. Just in parts of the U.S. But first nation.
I misinterpreted that. I want to say Holland, but you're going to say no as well.
I will say no, because that's not correct.
Yeah. Wow. You really feel like you're smarty pants all the time.
Well,
don't
I just
you?
Happen to look it up. That's the only reason I know.
Go
it.
Ahead. Wow us with how much you care.
Well, I do care, but it's just a question of how many people know this. Not many people know that it's legal in another country. In fact, right now at this moment, it's legal in one country in the world. Tomorrow it'll be two countries. But it's not the kind of country that you would expect, or not the kind of region that you would expect it to become legal. And you'd think it'd be one of these, you know, liberal countries, and maybe Scandinavia, something like that.
China?
China would be something that I would also be surprised if it was China. It definitely is not China, but that would be cool.
They export the most hemp.
Do they?
They do grow a lot of cannabis in China. But go ahead, lay it on us.
Are you sure you don't want to give one more guess?
No, I don't care.
You don't care?
I don't care about a lot of things right now.
Wow. Okay. Well,
go ahead.
This time of year does
entertain
that to people.
Us, please.
Well, now I feel silly because
no, I'm fascinated.
You know what? I won't tell you because I feel that this is something everybody should learn on their own.
Oh, goody!
Because I don't care now either. You see, it's your indifference is spreading.
Mm-hmm.
It's contagious, folks.
Got any other brain busters
Uruguay.
For us?
It's Uruguay, for God's sake, in South America. There, I said it. You wouldn't expect it there. You just somehow wouldn't. I don't know why I would say I don't expect it there. I didn't know they were super into marijuana in that country. But yeah, that's the only country in the world where it's currently legal. And Canada tomorrow will be the second country. And maybe someday the United States will be federally legal. You know, though, it's going to be very interesting because people coming to the United States from Canada who admit to smoking pot could be banned for life from entering the United States. Obviously not U.S. citizens, but Canadians. Now, it's legal in their country, and they will be able to go to dispensaries or go to stores and mail order, grow plants, whatever. They'll be able to do all of that. But if they come up, you know, against a cranky border guard who says, have you ever smoked marijuana? And they answer yes.
None of your gut.
They answer yes. They could be facing a lifetime or a long ban. If you lie about it and say no when actually somehow they know that it's yes, then you get a lifetime ban.
Okay.
So that's a quandary. That's a real issue.
Yeah. Yeah. I reserve some skepticism for the amount of people when faced with that kind of question from a border guard, but besides responding with how little of their business it is, I would just say no. I mean, who's going to say yes?
I don't know. I mean,
as far as they're concerned, no.
No. Yeah, I mean, I know where you're coming from, and there's a part of me that wants to say no, too, but there's another part of me that wants everyone to say yes. You know, to the point where no Canadians are allowed into the U.S. anymore.
Sure.
Which is actually more of a favor to them than it is to us.
Well, and also if you used as a medical treating an illness of some kind, mental or otherwise, or a patient in any capacity, I mean, you say yes. Are you really running afoul of anything because you have a condition and you need medicine? I mean, it's just so stupid.
Yeah, it is. You know, what's even crazier is you could be going from B.C. into Washington State and answer yes and be banned, even though it's legal in Washington and it's legal in B.C. It's because of the federal authorities here in this country. So it just depends on what kind of mood they're in. But they can do that. And that's something to be wary of. It will come up as an issue. And especially if you're involved in the industry, you know, if you happen to work for, you know, a farm or a dispensary up in Canada, it's going to be really difficult for them, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll just have to make hemp body armor for CPB and make them like us.
Yeah. Something like that.
Who knows?
Well, you had an interesting exchange of emails with representatives of yours. You want to tell us what that was all about?
Well, it was actually based on watching some of our videos from the conference. And as we're authoring, I'm producing a lot of these talks as DVDs because we want to get them out to people. And I was really motivated by one of the talks, which is sort of up my alley. But basically, that gave me the idea to contact representatives in my state about an issue that I've followed for quite a long time. And I found out by looking at their site that Washington was actually not participating in this. And that has to do with right to repair. There was a talk at Hope about this, and I went to the site to look at the progress that Washington had been making, thinking, well, of course, you know, a progressive place like the Pacific Northwest would be on top of this, and it turns out they're not.
Well, for those of us who might not know, what is right to repair?
Well, great, yeah, it's basically it's something that the EFF has been supporting and a couple of other organizations, and it really revolves around your right to access and modify and repair
stuff you own, stuff you maybe use as a tool, or on into the sort of realm of software. But there's and that gets into licensing and some of the sort of proprietary systems we often are faced with as users. But for me, I have a lot of sort of tangible examples. Being a self-taught mechanic, and that was a part of where I felt this was really hitting the road for me with vehicles. I have I worked and have a lot of experience and taught myself a lot of mechanical and other systems just by virtue of owning, operating, and wanting to fix things. We've talked about truckers and farmers and other interested parties, and there really are a lot. Whether it's people trying to repair a smartphone or what have you, whether you're an owner or, and this is perhaps even more important, a business around repairing things. In other words, a third party, and that's I think even more where I find some incompatibilities as a self-taught mechanic. You know, it's been something I've thought about, starting a business and the barriers to that. If I was to do things as a service provider, based on my knowledge of different products or mechanisms or machines, whatever it is, I would have a tough time getting the types of tools to interface perhaps with computer systems and other proprietary stuff that a lot of these companies tend not to open up, and a lot of times it's by design. And anecdotally, a lot of people with vehicles will have certain issues, and they can't go to their repair guy that they know for ages because he doesn't have access. And we've talked about this a lot with a car we have that's Canadian. Mechanics down here in the States can't really work on it because of Daimler and Mercedes sort of authoritarian control over those systems. They won't let even
dealers.
We're talking
about the smart car.
Yeah, they won't even let dealers down here. The other example that came to mind that I really have a visceral reaction to, and I think a lot of people that care about air quality would want to know, is the Dieselgate thing with Volkswagen. This is something that we were involved with.
Also involved in that.
I had been a repair technician for TDIs and other Volkswagens and diesel vehicles. And this hit home with me because anybody who followed that situation would realize that they basically had this black box of software and kind of hid under the shrouds of proprietary stuff, such that it was never audited. And it wasn't until someone got curious and actually did emissions testing on the road to see the defeat device that Volkswagen had baked into the TDI computer systems, which ended up in a $12 billion, $14 billion settlement and heads rolled and all kinds of stuff. But beyond that, the air quality we thought we had was not actually what was being produced by these vehicles. And I maintain that if the public and if independent shops and if software experts, if people could audit these systems, especially when you're getting into like autonomous and other kinds of vehicles, yeah, you, as a company, you might want to hold it close, but you can't do that too much. Because you end up putting, you end up forcing the public into a position of trust that I don't think the companies have earned.
Well, for the real layperson out there, just to give you a sense, we have another vehicle, the trusted 2600 van, which had to have a carburetor adjustment.
That's right.
or rebuilding. And a lot of cars today don't even have, most cars today don't have carburetors. It's a series of codes and access permission and things like that, that you have to have that before you can even touch components in today's car. It's not like you just take it down to your friendly mechanic on Main Street and he fixes your car for you. He has to have the right licenses in order to be able to do that. And of course, the idea is to get you to go to the dealer all the time, have them do all the work. And it's not like you even own your car. It's like you're using it and bringing it back to them for updates and things like that. And that's what you're trying to speak out against. Is that right?
Yeah, and particularly when support falls off, because, you know, we know this, I know this, having been familiar with Microsoft products, eventually support ends, and dealerships will only try to make so much money before they kind of don't want to fix your car, and or they quote you stuff that is so exorbitant that it's really more practical for you to sit there and talk to the guy that wants to sell you a new one. And a lot of people like their vehicles. A lot of people want to maintain their vehicles. And what I think is going on here is the sort of planned obsolescence that is baked into the business models for a lot of these companies, as opposed to quality, reliability, and repairability. And, you know, that can be a part of your product, but if you're not empowering the owner or the third-party technician to have an intelligent conversation as far as questions they may have and training, you really pretty much hamstring that vehicle into being something the consumer can't afford and maintain, and it basically begets more junk. And then the kind of last thing that I don't want to forget is innovation. A lot of people do really cool things with products. They rebuild them, repurpose them, turn them into something that they are not. An example of this is all the TDIs that were recalled. Those will all be scrapped somehow for the weight in metal. But how we're using waste like that, how it could be reused, what those motors could be redesigned to be installed in, those ideas go out the window. It ends up being an insurance write-off for the manufacturers. You're not allowing any kind of innovation to really fix even those kind of corporate errors. But the stuff that people do in the aftermarket, with old stuff that could still have life breathe into it, that stuff relies on getting access to these things. And as they're more complex, like on the current TDI models, those injectors for each cylinder have to be programmed and associated with computer codes that, again, as you said, are sort of only in the hands of dealers. And that just makes it impossible for third-party mechanics to really have an equal playing field as in the repair business. And I think that is abjectly wrong and unfair, and I think in Washington there are arguments. Maybe there are entities like Boeing that don't want that many people working on the systems of their planes or repairing their planes, and there may be arguments there for authorized
You don't want Joe Schmo doing mechanical work on a Boeing 767 or something.
That's right. So there are perhaps safety arguments and conversations that could be had, but I don't think that should preclude the concept of an individual's right to repair. And I just think there's way too much power in the hands of very, very large companies, and way too little advocacy on behalf of the consumer. And that's why I contacted some people through the repair.org website, because to my shock, nothing really had been done in Washington.
So what kinds of people did you contact? What kind of reply did you get?
Well, it was cool. The site itself has a mechanism, and I form letters are one thing. I actually wrote a pretty heartfelt chunk of text to kind of describe my angle. And I truly believe that if we are going to have a thriving industrial future, robotics and autonomous systems and massively complex systems rule the day, we need more humans with training, and we need more third party and other businesses around the support and maintenance of these systems. We're not just going to have KUKA or whatever robotics company. They're going to be in complete control of everything. We need people that understand all the different models of manufacturing robots or whatever it is. But we can't continue on this path and continue to just sort of throw things away and buy a new one. I think, we're at a point where if you own or operate something, you should have a wide array of knowledge and training and other software and tools to affect your own repairs. and not be beholden to a specific manufacturer, especially if it's going to bankrupt you, and on, because this factors into the way people live and run their businesses.
Sounds like the free market, competition, that kind of thing.
Yeah, equality in that. And then anyway, so I did get a response. I had a couple representatives write me back, and I felt pretty good about that.
And these weren't form letters?
No. They, it seems, had read my comments and were quite supportive of the overall concept. And I just really hope, and I said in closing, you know, watch out for this, whether you're supportive or not, because I think there's a lot of people that are realizing, hey, I can't do something, you know, with my device, and it's going to cost me $800 to get back to a place where I can at least function. And that kind of cost is something that I think more and more people are sensitive to. And you know, waste itself is an environmental cur, and you know, in itself is not ideal in the kind of future I think a lot of us want.
Well, congrats to you for actually putting your thoughts into words, not just a form letter, and writing them into an email. And I think you've proven that by doing that, you actually get the attention of other humans who write back to you, and that is how democracy is supposed to work.
Yeah, I admit catching up a bit, mostly because we're so busy all the time with exciting stuff. But I felt like I had just wanted to look, and I couldn't let this go. I had to speak on it myself, and we'll see. We'll keep following developments with that. And yeah, if you make stuff, if you're a big company, you know, think about creating a mechanism for open architectures or open repair or whatever it is. But make some kind of mechanism that gives people who use your products or rely on them more control and more ability to innovate and push technology, you know, further and farther.
Do you have the website handy? That
yeah, it's repair.org.
Repair.org.
Yep.
Oh, that's a good one. Okay.
I'm pretty sure everything's there. Repair.org, and you can find your state, figure out what's going on, and activate the same kind of call to action, which no doubt many other organizations are doing on a variety of other topics.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, this was presented in a talk at the Circle of Hope in July, which you are making the DVD version of, or maybe you've already finished that one.
As fast as we can, yes. I'm producing all of them.
For those people who still use DVDs, but we also have the MP4s available as well. It's great to see this kind of thing being discussed, and it's an important topic in the hacker community. But mostly, I think it shows, you know, what you have shown here is that you can reach out to elected officials and actually get responses back, and that is a theme that I think we need to focus upon in the next next few weeks, certainly, because 3 weeks from today is Election Day.
Yeah, a lot of them are thinking about this kind of stuff, not specifically, but they're definitely concerned about what their constituents care about.
Right.
So now's a great time to remind them, hey, you know, you didn't do anything on this, and elections are coming, so maybe you should at least pay some lip service. So this
absolutely
speaks to many different issues there.
But you know, I'm worried. I'm really very worried about where we're going. Because I'm seeing a lot of, I don't know, bad signs where there are so many Trump apologists out there, so many people who are just willing to turn a blind eye to things that are quite obviously wrong and give him credit for things that he has very little, if anything, to do with. And, you know, I think back to 2 years ago when we were talking on the radio about the same guy. And wondering, who is it that supports him? Who are these people? We don't know any of them. And, of course, you know, we were wrong then because, well, we were right in that we didn't know any of them, but we were wrong in not seeking them out. And, well, actually, why would we try to seek them out? I guess we just weren't – we didn't have our eyes open enough. But the other thing is they were keeping quiet. They were keeping very, very quiet. And now, 2 years later, it seems like they're everywhere. It seems like people who support Trump are all over the place, and they're unashamed. And I just worry that they're gathering strength and kind of being bolstered both by their own propaganda, but also by the, dare I say it, incompetence of the other side, which continues to, I don't know, not really know how to reach people or reach people in awkward ways and you know, not controlling the dialogue. And so we always have to be playing catch up. you know, falling into traps. Like, for instance, this whole thing with Elizabeth Warren yesterday with her DNA test to prove she was part Native American. I understand why she did that, because Trump made a big deal of it, but it backfired. And anyone could have predicted it would backfire, because now people are saying, oh, look, you're only 1/1000th of an Indian. And, you know, it's basically the only reason she did that was because Trump made it a big deal. And now you've got all kinds of talk show hosts and newspapers and even the Cherokee Nation. They're condemning her for doing this. Cherokee Nation Secretary of State. I didn't know they had a Secretary of State.
You say that with disdain.
I'm sorry.
You say that like it's with disdain, like they don't deserve to be a nation. Are you
why would you say that?
No, I heard
why
it.
Why would you even think that?
It was in your voice.
Uh-huh.
You know what? I think we should have a talk about
this. No, I said even the Cherokee people.
We all heard what you said.
That should know better, that should know who is more likely to be a friend of theirs. They came out against Elizabeth Warren taking a DNA test. And were completely silent on Trump saying, I want to give you a DNA test myself to prove, you know, she would not be doing this. She would not be doing this were it not for him. In fact, I think she should have just ignored him and not done it anyway, because, you know, when remember the birth certificate, remember Obama's birth certificate, it doesn't matter what you do. If you respond to them, just like if you respond to any troll, you're never going to satisfy them. You're never going to get them to shut up. They're just going to keep pushing. They're going to call you a liar. They're going to say, this is fake. They're going to demand something else, and they will just tie you up forever. And unfortunately, the Cherokee Nation is apparently falling for this, and a lot of the media is falling for this. Actually, you know what? I'm not sure the media is falling for it. I think the media might actually just want this. Because what I've noticed in the last few days, I've noticed that there's a lot more anti-Democratic candidate talk on the media while ignoring a lot of the things that Trump has done. For instance, Beto O'Rourke, the candidate for governor candidate for senator in Texas against Ted Cruz, came under fire today on CNN because he raised all this money and he's not sharing it with other candidates in Texas. Now, I didn't know you had to do that. I don't think anyone else does that. There's the next story after this was, hey, Trump has raised $100 million for his reelection campaign, which he started the day he actually was inaugurated. Is he sharing that with anybody? You know, that wasn't the story. Instead, they're focusing on the Democratic candidate for Senate in Texas, not sharing his money with other candidates. He raised the money for his candidacy, for his campaign. And my understanding is that that's what it's for. That's what it should be used for. So you're seeing these weird stories that are focusing on things that really shouldn't be issues. And whenever you do that, you're kind of ignoring the things that are issues, such as all the kids that haven't been reunited with their parents, all the hate speech that's going on, the you know, the attacks by right-wing mobs. Oh, okay, the other thing is changing the narrative to make it like the left wing is a bunch of violent crazies. I mean, they're getting away with that.
That happened over the weekend with the Proud Boy incident in New York City here.
Yeah, no, I don't claim to know all the facts. I wasn't there. And I do know that sometimes the truth does get sacrificed in situations like this. But I do know that these Proud Boys are not nice boys. They are racist. They are ultra-nationalists. They, you know, and people are saying, but look, there's a black guy. Like that's supposed to prove something, you know, that, okay, hatred can span all races, all religions, all sexes. It can do that. You're not proving anything. But basically, the Republican Party in New York City or Republican Club, whatever they're called, invited this this guy to speak. And their offices got vandalized with graffiti the night before. That kind of thing does happen.
And they were surprised.
And then there was some kind of I saw a video of people being kicked on the ground, and it was pretty obvious those were not the left wing people doing that. And they were using all kinds of vile language that I won't repeat here. And not one of them was arrested. Meanwhile, some left wing protesters were arrested. So, you know, it's the same old thing. And you know, if you read comments after the news stories in the mainstream media, you'll see questions, or on Twitter you'll see questions like, "Well, how many of these guys are already, you know, friends with the cops?" And responses will basically take the tone of "Not enough." You know, we have to get these Antifa scum out of this country, you know, in body bags, things like that, horrible things like that. And when you think about what they're doing, you know, these are anti-fascist demonstrators that are being portrayed as the enemy. How do you do that exactly? How do you demonize somebody who is fighting fascism, you know, Nazis, things like that? People who are unashamedly spouting that rhetoric. It's not like it's a theoretical thing. And I have seen that done. I have seen people falsely accused of being fascist just because of who they support. It's not the same thing at all. It's not the same thing. Wearing a Trump hat is not the same as being a fascist. But speaking like a fascist, going to fascist rallies, kicking people on the sidewalk, spouting racism and anti-immigrant rhetoric and things like that. And a lot of these people are in the government now.
Yeah, neo-Nazi dog whistles.
Yeah, that is the real thing. And that is something that I expect anti-fascist crowds to target. And we should be grateful for that. We should be happy that there are people out there who are willing to do this, and we should be a part of that. Instead, you see basically this false equivalency of, well, you know, there's this side and there's that side. Yeah, that side sucks. That side should be destroyed. You know, there is no rational reason to go through all this again. We've already been down this road. So when I see people basically ignoring the evils of the fascists and the Nazis and then trying to transfer that kind of categorization over to the people who are fighting that, calling them Nazis, which makes no sense at all, that's when I start to really worry about how effective all the pounding into our heads of this rhetoric and propaganda has been over the last couple of years. I think it's been more effective than either of us certainly would be comfortable with, and maybe either of us would even believe.
Yeah, I think a lot of the validation and people, as you said, coming out, being emboldened, being more on display and visible is one part of this. But I also think a lot of people are rationalizing or convincing themselves, you know, maybe I could get on board. Maybe it's not as bad. It's not directly affected me. It's not hurting my family or my business. So maybe I'll co-sign a little bit. Maybe I'll just, it's I don't approve of this, but it's not so bad, you know. And there's a lot of that kind of neutralizing of what is incredibly caustic, simply by virtue of comfort.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah. You know, it's also what I see is people on the other side being targeted because they're different, because they're saying things that they're, you know, people aren't used to. Transgender, what's all that? You know, what's gender fluid? What bathroom are people supposed to use? You know, things that hey, we can have a discussion about this. We can listen to people and learn, or we can ridicule. And the thing is, you know, when you're introducing new ideas and, you know, people who look a little different, it's easy to become the subject of ridicule. And for those people who are afraid of their own way of life being somehow threatened, to see you as the enemy. That's what we're seeing with immigrants. That's what we're seeing with the gay community. We're seeing it with anybody who stands out just a little bit from the norm. And I think, you know, that demonstrates the insecurity of that norm and how they feel that, you know, it's not a safe time for white men, right? It's not a safe time for young kids who might be accused of doing something someday. I'd be more afraid of the young kids who actually did do something someday and were, you know, basically were legitimately found guilty of doing that. That is what we should be focused on, not, you know, being afraid of feminism or being afraid of victims who find their voice. But that is the world that we seem to be in right now. What worries me is that we're kind of just letting it happen and not speaking out enough. You know, Antifa is one thing. It's one avenue. It's not something that everybody goes along with who disagrees, obviously. It's one of many, many ways of opposing, of speaking out. But I don't hear enough voices. For instance, if we give out the phone number right now, 631-632-9872, guarantee you the majority of calls will be pro-Trump. And this is WUSB. This is a station from Stony Brook. But whenever we open up the phone calls, we have Trump apologists calling up, you know, talking about, you know, the illegal immigrants as if they're roaming the streets causing mayhem. Nothing could be further from the truth. The same thing in the magazine, you know, when we print letters to the editor or even articles, many of them are anti-whatever is not pro-Trump. And it's, you know, I know there are plenty of people out there who feel differently, but they keep quiet. How many of you out there wouldn't put a bumper sticker on your car that criticized Trump? How many of you would not put a sign on your front lawn that, you know, supported a candidate that was running against the Trump agenda? You don't do that because you're afraid of the reaction you might get. You're afraid of having your car vandalized or, you know, your house spray painted or just being targeted as an individual. That is how they win. That is how these things take hold. It's happened over and over and over again. And you should never be afraid to speak your mind. That goes for people I disagree with as well. I will always support the right to say things. What I will not support is the right to intimidate people and denigrate people, to categorize people in negative ways. It's something that I see, you know, repeating, whether it's out there on the street or inside your own home. How many of us keep quiet when, you know, our relatives say racist things or, you know, things that we know are wrong, and we want to keep the peace. We just don't say anything. That's what's happening in this country.
Yeah, people should be reminded that direct action, even just standing in opposition, is something that really angers this sort of dominant crowd. They don't like being confronted. They want sameness. They want more people to fall in line and not challenge ignorance and sort of retrograde ideology. And that's, you know, very easy to do. I think people think it is more complex. And honestly, just to the vandalism and stuff like that, you know, better that than a slow creep towards what or what a lot of these groups want. Okay, you know, if your car window or something happens, that's a small price to pay in relation to the general direction of things and what it could portend.
It's also a price that I think we're going to have to be willing to pay in order to take a stand, because not doing so, that's more expensive, because you're giving something up that way. If you take a stand and you're punished for it in some way that the rest of the world sees, that's making an even bigger statement. And, you know, something that comes to mind, we've been seeing a lot of campaign signs out here for the local race that we've talked about many times, the Zeldin Gershon race for the first congressional district in New York. And lately, and we've both noticed this, along with a number of other people, that the Perry Gershon signs are being vandalized, torn down, and there are even obscene bumper stickers that somebody made up that they're sticking over them. I've seen cases where Gershon signs are basically, they have a Zeldin sign right in front of them, you know, just to block them. I mean, it's obvious that this is happening from supporters of the other side. It's something that it's hard to point the finger and say, oh, no, you're staging that. You know, it's pretty obvious that somebody is vandalizing these things. It's also, I've seen firsthand the hatred that comes from people who oppose that side. If you have a bumper sticker, you will get the middle finger from people. I saw an old couple in their 80s. A guy was on an oxygen mask, screaming at the top of their lungs, giving the middle fingers, shouting obscenities because somebody had a Gershon sign in their car. I mean, where is this anger coming from? Where is this hostility? This frightening display of, I mean, I'm all for the electoral process and debates and things like that and hashing it out. That's not what this is. These are intimidation tactics, pure and simple. And it's not just here on Long Island. It's throughout the country. People are reporting things like this. It's not healthy. And staying silent is probably the best way to ensure that this kind of thing continues.
Yeah. I just think, you know, we have to have a counterpoise to that attitude. And you can't just sit idly and not act in a direct fashion and, you know, sort of wait for this generation to die because they have a lot of kids and they're raising them on this.
Yeah, yeah. And if that succeeds, if there are a lot of young people who buy into this crap, then I really do think we're doomed. I really do think that. I also think, you know, if this election doesn't go well, I think a lot of people will give up. A lot of people will lose faith in anything, and I also think that would that will lead to a bad result 2 years down the road. You know, a re-election campaign will turn out to be successful. A good result will be probably the best shot in the arm we've gotten since World War II, and I think the inspiration that comes from that will lead us to amazing things. What I want to know, what I really want to know, is where all this anger is coming from that seems to be coming from the right wing. They're in power. Okay, they run the damn country. They have basically, they've taken districts everywhere, whether it's through gerrymandering or electoral college, all kind. They've used the rules. I'm not saying that they're cheating, but they're using the rules in ways that benefit them. And probably weren't really thought out by the people who made the rules in the first place as being used that way. So, yeah, okay, you got everything. Yet you're still so angry and so afraid of different things. You know, I don't get that. I don't get that at all. Why, you know, why are we a threat at this point? Why are people from other countries such a threat? Why are different ways of thinking and scientists and the journalists... Why is that something that you are so afraid of when you control everything?
Yeah, we had this discussion, and it really is confounding. It doesn't really make sense, and I don't have any answers necessarily, but I think they want the culture. They want a Christian, a white, straight culture of, wealthy Americans, and that anger and that fear is, I think, a sneaking suspicion in the back of their head that that's just not going to happen.
But, you know, I see a lot of white Christianity all around every day.
Well, that's just it. They have they are the hegemonic cultural phenomena. You know, that's the dominant thing. Whenever I see, you know, this victimization or this victimhood of white men, that they're not represented or they're not, you know, catered to in some way is complete balderdash. I mean, it's just, it makes no sense because everything about our society caters to them. Oh, look at the media. Look at the do critical analysis of the types of relationships you see on TV, the types of codes for masculinity on TV, and what is normal in the kinds of ads you see. Yeah, there's challenging and new and varied and diverse things. That's great. Thanks to GLAAD for making that happen in a lot of ways and individual companies. But the lion's share of our themes and our shows, our fictional stories and sitcoms, a lot of these are still very, very, very much in the cis and straight nuclear traditional values camp. You have symbols of Christianity. You have all kinds of that. So, that there's any diversity. Ah, yes. Well, for them, it is an abject and imminent threat, however small. But it's also pathetic.
Yeah. It just it both amazes me and scares me to see why this still remains. Why is this something that we don't move past? And you know, I just don't see what the threat is that is going to take away people's quality of life or people's way of life by simply being a diverse society, having things like healthcare for all. Why is that something people argue? Why is that something that people think, you know, you willingly pay a huge amount of taxes for all kinds of things that you have no say in, and this is the issue that you will not budge on. You know, you'll give more to the military every year. You'll give more to rich people in the form of tax breaks. You won't complain about that, but something that benefits everybody, including yourself at some point, that is something you will not tolerate. While the deficit goes up and up, while the budget gaps are huge, not because of that, because of all the other spending that we do that you support. It's, you know, and I see the polls, you know, the polls here in Suffolk County, you know, both the Peter King race and the Lee Zeldin race, the Republicans are ahead. How is that possible? Why are there so many people who fall for this? Ted Cruz is leading in Texas. You know, I just, after all we've been through in the last couple of years, I just expected a blue tidal wave. And maybe the polls are wrong. Maybe, you know, they haven't asked the right people the right questions. I just hope in 3 weeks people find their voices, because while you may be afraid to put a bumper sticker on your car or a sign on your front lawn or speak out publicly with your relatives, you shouldn't be afraid to go into those polls 3 weeks from today and voice your real opinion and make a real difference. I hope people are courageous enough to do that, because that is how change occurs. That's how, you know, we're going to actually steer the ship a little bit. Okay.
Or have balance. I mean, this is about balance. And, you know, our system is set up in that way. And at this point, you know, as is said, checks and balances, the balance is the electorate, you know, the voting populace.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there is so much good here. So many amazing people that are, you know, filled with good ideas that need to be encouraged. And we grow through our diversity and through our ingenuity, and we need to be encouraging that.
Yeah, you know, you got your tax cuts. You got, you know.
No, you didn't, Kyle. You didn't get your damn tax cuts. You got one thing for 1 year.
You got all the Muslims being stopped.
Yeah.
At the border.
This whole anti-immigrant thing, it really, it's so upsetting to me. Because, you know, I saw one of the Lee Zeldin ads on the way over. And it's just so filled with hatred towards, you know, basically the claim was that Perry Gershom wants to have free health care for illegal immigrants. That was the hook. Yeah, that's what he's campaigning on, to have people coming from other countries to get free health care and make you, the poor senior citizen, pay for it. That's so absurd on the face of it. How can you believe that for a second? You're smarter than that, for God's sake. But here's the thing. This hatred and fear of people from other countries. First of all, the very term illegal immigrant, and that's the nice term. There are so many people out there that just refer to them as illegals, which is such objectification to refer to somebody in that way. What does that mean? What does that mean? You know, yeah, you don't have the right documents. You're in the country. You've overstayed your visa. You know how many illegal things we do? And you know, on average, whether it's jaywalking, cheating on our taxes, driving over the limit of alcohol, you know, all kinds of things. Not one of those people is referred to as illegal anything. Okay? So how is it that you're able to categorize a person, an entire human being, as illegal based on one action or one violation? You know, it's that disproportionate way of judging people that really bothers me, because, you know, okay, these things should be dealt with. There's no question about that, but let's put it into you know, some kind of balance. Not every illegal immigrant is a criminal that's out to destroy your house and kill your family. But that's how it's being portrayed, and it just is insane to be continually doing this without question. And that's what I'm seeing all the time.
And we have an illegal president.
Yeah, I mean, consider the crimes that Donald Trump has committed. All right, just the ones we know about. And by this definition, yeah, he's an illegal. It sounds absurd, doesn't it? But when you refer to people that way, it basically makes them less human. And I just, that kind of thing really bugs me.
It implies they don't have rights either.
Right, and that's got nothing to do with the issues themselves. Yeah, there are problems with immigration. But they're not problems that are threatening our daily way of life. You might convince yourself that they are. Yeah, MS-13 is a bad thing, but you know what? A lot of it is domestic. It's got nothing to do with other countries in many cases. Sometimes it does. And there are other gangs, too, and there's all kinds. I mean, you know, the mob, that's kind of a big gang. There's all kinds of other things going on in this country that we never talk about. So why demonize this one thing? And also the victims of these gangs from other countries tend to be people from those other countries, too. So the whole thing is just out of proportion.
Yeah, it's a scapegoat, and it makes people feel safe and in their sameness and homogeneity, you know, having comfort in their tribe. But the real, I think, critique, in my opinion, ought to be greed and profit seeking. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of self-interest and corporate psychopaths that are putting – workers in this state, in this condition, and mm-hmm. They've been fooled into thinking they themselves could be an owner at any point, and it's a bit of a long shot for most people in the grand scheme, and people don't necessarily want to fault the entities that that actually drive these things. I'm speaking of lobbyists and the alleged swamp, it's again just an easy racist scapegoat for bigger issues that we refuse to address because of the political narrative.
But anyway, this is a conversation that obviously is going to be continuing. I am told, though, that there are debates ahead in the local congressional district, Grace, and wherever you're listening, you should be looking for similar types of interactions in whatever races are happening in your area. We'd like to hear about those as well. But here in the 1st Congressional District, apparently there are debates that have been agreed to between Lee Zeldin and Perry Gershon. And the thing is, Lee Zeldin never debates. He never talks to people. He's like, you know, one of these people you know that just kind of isn't talking to you. If you don't agree with him, if you're not one of his cussing supporters that's intimidating everybody who doesn't agree with you, you're not somebody he wants to talk to or even acknowledge in any way. And you know, it's easy to prove. When's the last time there was a town hall? Many years ago. Does not respond to people. Does not have office hours where you can meet with him. And has not been debating his opponent. Well, apparently there are three debates on the agenda. One is for 1 week from tonight in Smithtown. That's just a few miles away from here. The League of Women Voters. And hopefully we'll have more details on exactly when and where. But that's on October 23rd. October 24th, this might be the big one. It's on News 12. So that'll be interesting. The whole island can see that. That's a week from Wednesday. And then October 29th, I believe that's a Monday, again, the League of Women Voters in Hampton Bays. So three at least possible debates if Lee Zeldin shows up. And we'll be following those very closely. Maybe we'll even have some audio from that. It's democracy. It's dirty business, but it's necessary. And I sure hope people out there get involved.
Yeah, it's for you. You can find out more about this. And other events as the campaign season ramps up into a fervor, and we're more optimistic than perhaps we sound, but there are so many particular issues that we're just woefully behind as far as a community, and we want to hear more actual discussions, not just rhetoric, not sort of ignorant talking points. We want to hear who has the best platform, who is actually going to engage with all the people they represent, and how we can affect this locally and further.
Okay, we are out of time. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. And for Off the Wall, this is Emmanuel and Kyle.
Bye.
Good night.
Step by step. All the happy saints go marching in. And if a saint step out of line, you have to start again. Cause Jacob's golden ladder gets slippery at the top. And many a happy-go-lucky saint has made that long, long drop. If I'm late, don't wait. Go on without me. Smile.
Children play all around the throne, innocent of sin. A trillion voices sing the name the mortal may not know. In heaven's walls too high to hear the trouble down below. If I'm late, don't wait. Go!
Sisters.
The Pope was speaking at the Vatican. We'll speak with human...